Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hagan. I'm working at
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Hello, everybody. Chuck Bonneville, Julie Hayden, Truth Straight Up, the Chuck and Julie Show on a beautiful Wednesday. And you can feel that spring is coming. Spring in the Rockies.
We want the snow in the backyard to melt. But yeah, show brought to you today by AmericasCitizenPress.com, a great conservative website covering national and state conservative news, or news from a conservative perspective, and Synagenics and Dr. Julie McCallan.
Who keeps me alive? Technically, I've been in debt about a decade ago.
But you're doing good. His golf swing is better. So that's a big thing. Hey, coming up at the bottom of the hour, a really interesting guest, an author who reached out to us by the name of Roy Johnston. He wrote a book, 34 Days in Holding, and it talks about the election. He said he started thinking 34 days out from the election that somebody better start keeping track of things and documenting everything as it was going along.
That was one of the things, because the president can't do everything, but it would have been incredibly important for the RNC and everything to put all their resources to stop the steal.
Right. And so he will be on to talk about some of the information he found out and tell us where we can get his book and all.
And we have good news that Texas not only reopened, but Mississippi and Alabama is supposed to reopen on Friday. And of course, our beloved, highly intelligent and prescient president called that Neanderthal thinking. We must keep everything closed. We must destroy America just for me.
And you know, that kind of leads into a couple topics we want to talk about. Longtime anchor at Fox 10 in Phoenix quit, basically saying the COVID thing was a straw that broke the camel's back. She just couldn't take it anymore. Just the way the media has gone, journalism basically is dead. We'll talk about that because I have a little bit of experience with that. Yeah. Directly why I ended up getting out of the business as well and getting into the talk radio business. And I think the COVID thing.
And getting thrown off talk radio.
And then getting thrown off talk radio because of Chuck. It's like, thank you, Chuck.
Just want to add that.
But it also, though, I think the COVID thing all ties into why, theoretically, a fair and honest media is so important, because I'll talk about an experience I had.
That is such a...
I know. But even remotely,
it never was a fair and balanced media, but nothing could be worse. I mean, today is worse than it was than colonial times, far worse.
Right. And then a couple of things going on in the Colorado legislature.
All
good things. Safe storage pass for gun owners requirement.
Safe storage. So you can't get to your gun when they
storage.
Kill you. Yeah.
And then Carrie Donovan, who wants to replace Lauren Boebert, she has a bill that would essentially censor everything they don't like.
Yeah.
Like Dr. Seuss and things.
Yeah,
and then
Dr. Seuss.
I'm going to say, I have to take a brief message. So it was Rev's 10th birthday yesterday. I don't know how old you guys all were when you got your first.
Today, but we have a lot of 10-year-olds watching you.
Well, no, but I was going to say how old you were when you got your first cell phone. But Rev got his first cell phone, and he is now texting me that he is done with school. So let me just text him back. He was very excited. It's kind of funny, kids these days. He had his cell phone for like 3 minutes. And he figured out how to send like a message making himself look like a giraffe, or the giraffe would say his word. I mean, in 3 minutes.
And access Pornhub. It was amazing ability for a child to figure out so quickly to be able to use all these sources of information.
I have parental controls. But it was astonishing. I'm looking, he's like, I have the same phone. And I'm like, how did you do that? And he's like, I don't know. So I apologize. It's his first day. We're hoping he won't be FaceTiming.
We got him a watch phone, and he just
broke that.
He played around with it, and then boom. So maybe Maybe this will go the same way, but I have a feeling it won't.
No, it was kind of fun. On the way to school today, he had the compass app on. So every time I turned the car, he was telling me which direction and how many degrees. Yeah, actually cell phones, who knew? I just use mine to call and text, sometimes to look at Twitter. So whole new world for us. We will share our cell phone knowledge. If you need to know how to make yourself be
a giraffe. A lot of cars have a compass in it, right?
Right.
And so mine doesn't for whatever reason. I said, God damn it, I wish I had a compass. It did not occur to me. Then I just had to look at my cell phone and bring up the compass app.
So I want to start off today. And by the way, phone's open. 888, I always forget this, 888-627-6008. 888-627-6008. If you're on Zoom, feel free to open up your mic. Yeah, and Zoom on up too. We'd love to have you there. Once again, remember, one person at a time makes it easier just for us production-wise. But today, there was, I guess it actually came out yesterday, Carrie Lake, who was a 22-year veteran of a number one rated TV newscast in Phoenix.
Fox, and you Fox have to 10. Realize that Fox, it's Fox usually is not the number one rated because it doesn't come off the regular networks. It comes off of the Fox one.
It's a local news.
Yeah. So for a local news to be number one and be Fox, it's highly unusual.
Exactly. For that many years. Exactly.
It's unbelievable.
Which means that, and then she released a video, and we're going to play a portion of that in a second, basically saying she's quitting. She said, journalism is not what it used to be, not even close. I don't like the direction that it's going, don't agree with the direction that it's going, and I'm tired of fighting what is an increasingly losing battle in the newsroom. So she quit. And she said, I want to make it clear, I wasn't fired. The Fox people were very supportive, but made it also clear nothing was going to change, you know? And they're probably glad to save her salary too. And said, I know I'm going to get attacked for this. But
no, the Democrats would never do that. The Libs would never do that.
They would never attack.
They're generous. You know, people.
Right. But let me go, Thomas, if we could play the Anchor Quits video, because I want to talk about this because I think it is so pertinent to a lot of things going on today.
The media needs more balance in coverage and a wider range of viewpoints represented in every newsroom, at every level, and in each position. In the past few years, I haven't felt proud to be a member of the media. I'm sure there are other journalists out there who feel the same way. I found myself reading news copy that I didn't believe was fully truthful or only told part of the story. And I began to feel that I was contributing to the fear and division in this country by continuing on in this profession. It's been a serious struggle for me, and I no longer want to do this job anymore. So I've decided the time is right to do something else.
And she goes on to say she doesn't have that something else lined up, but that's what
I
she's...
I think she will get one.
I think,
she looks very, very professional.
She's clearly a great anchor, it seems
not
to me.
Not everybody after 22 years looks as good as Julie.
No, believe me. I can attest to that. But I want to tell a little bit, when I quit at Fox 31 News, and I think it's important to understand that we're talking local news now, so I don't have any experience, very little experience about what goes on a national level. But I can tell you...
Neither does Carrie.
but what she says is absolutely true, that in a newsroom, when I quit at Fox, it was right after Trump was elected. Chuck and I had been doing I'm going to tell a story first, what had happened right before then, where during the campaign, the Media Matters people, which are progressive media people, tracked the show that we did at the time. I think it was either on KOA or at 710
KOA. And they've got another organization run by the biggest slime ball in all of the media. What's his name? Jason Salzman.
And so they had called, Jason Salzman had called my news director, Chuck, and I did a radio show. And in that radio show, I said that I thought then President Obama hates America. So he called my newsroom to complain to try to get me fired. So the news director drags me in, and she was a great news director. I had no problem with her. But she said, did you say that? And I'm like, yeah. And I said, but, you know, a couple things to point out here. I said it in my radio show. I didn't say it in my TV reporting. Right. My radio show, which everybody knows is a comment thing. I said, I don't cover President Obama. So even if I were biased against him, and we're going to show that in my reporting, it would never happen because I don't report. But then I said, but you know what? What really frosts me is if I had said Trump hates America, no one would have a problem. If I had said Obama loves America and he's the world's greatest president, no one would have called up from the progressive left and said, hey, that Julie Hayden, you know, she's biased in favor of President Obama. No, it's only conservative speech that gets censored.
And here's why I love Jason Salzman. So after he tries to get her fired, on TV, and then we'll go to the other one. And then he did get us fired off radio for a half joke. He continued to keep on calling Julie. Just, hi, Julie. How you doing? Hey, Julie. It's Jason. It's your little Jason.
Well, and I don't want to, personally, I don't want to make this about Jason Softman.
I do. Because, okay. Well, maybe you don't. I do. He's okay. An utter creep.
Let me finish
You're a creep, Jason.
Chuck, let me finish my story.
Not to be personal. I'm trying to be objective.
Just for the record, I'm not saying that I want to finish my story because I think there's a much bigger and more important issue here. And so then fast forward a few years, and Chuck and I are doing this show. We've been doing it for years. Everybody at the station knows we've been doing it. And we were clearly pro-Trump. I can't tell you the number of times people in the newsroom, other employees, would come up to me and say, thank God that you are doing that show. Thank God that you are here in the newsroom to try to at least present another point of view. I can't tell you that the way newsrooms work is you sit down and you have your morning meetings, and that's where the reporters and photographers and the producers and the newsroom management, everybody gets together and they figure out what news of the day you're going to cover. There are a lot of things wrong with the news industry now. Some of it has nothing to do with politics and everything to do with finances, I'll say that. And the fact that many of the older, veteran, more knowledgeable reporters have been forced out because of money issues. And it's filled now with much younger reporters with very little experience who, frankly, I think have been coddled in this, oh, if anything offends me, then we have to stop it kind of attitude. But the number of times I'd sit there in the morning meetings and all of the proposals were anti-Trump. They were all anti-conservative. They were all pro-gun control. Nobody in the newsroom knew anything about guns, but everything was an assault rifle and was killing people. It was, and every time, you know, I would raise my hand and I'd say, I'm sorry, but you realize that like 50% of the people, you know, voted for Trump or are going to vote for Trump. And one of the more telling, and I think I told this story before, this was after Trump was elected. I had a young reporter come to me because he didn't want to do this himself. It's like, let's tell Julie.
Julie will take the bullets.
She'll do anything. But he came to me and he said, Julie, they want me to go cover people who voted for Trump. And he said, they're sending me to a biker bar in Greeley. And I'm like, what? And he said, no, I voted for Trump. My parents voted for Trump. I know you voted for Trump. He's like, you know, I think it's wrong that they're stereotyping the Trump supporters. So I go in to the news management and I say, you know, we could just go down the street to the Cherry Creek Mall, I bet, and find plenty of people who voted for Trump. We could go to Littleton. We could go anywhere. We don't need to go to a biker bar in Greeley. We could find soccer moms
and Highlands
Ranch. Yeah, that's exactly. But it was that attitude. And the people who were telling him that were the people who were making the main decisions about.
And they didn't do this maliciously.
No, no.
In their mind, you know,
they were being fair.
Where could you find one with some chance of striking gold and finding one of those rare people who in that particular election was close to 45% of the entire state.
Right. And I would point out, you know, 4 out of 10 people in this newsroom statistically voted for Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. But you could not say it. I guarantee you could not say it. And if you were a producer and you were writing, or if you were a reporter putting together the story, you had to do it. That I mean, the peer pressure, you would think these were all adults and intellectual adults, but they make it extremely difficult. And then one day, the day came when the general manager called me in and said, hey, you're doing this radio show and I don't want you to do an opinion radio show anymore. And I pointed out that we've been doing it for roughly 10 years.
In part because in their last downturn of problems, they'd cut your salary in return.
Right.
And they said, okay, go do what you want. Well, they didn't call, you know, we saved some money off of you.
That's right. And they said, no, you can't do that anymore. And I pointed out that I had a contract with the radio station. Didn't matter. Didn't care. This is the general manager. They said, you have to choose. Now, at the time, I think they thought I would choose to stay in TV,
right,
which meant I would have to keep my mouth shut. I'd have to stop saying, hello, you know that some people support Trump. Hello. I got into a fight with them one time. It was a story. It's funny, but it's not funny. I got a call from a guy, and he lived in Aurora, and he was upset because they lived next door. It's in the suburbs. It was in Aurora, right? And he said the family next door got some goats. And his kids were really excited because they could look out the upstairs window and they could see the goats. And they thought, he goes, I wasn't sure that you could have goats, but we thought it was cute, right? And he said, then he and his kids are looking at it one day, and the family next door, who were illegal immigrants, by the way, slaughtered the goats and then ate
as
them.
You do.
And then he's like, he as freaked out. So he called the code enforcement people,
right.
And the code enforcement people said that he was being culturally insensitive.
Yeah.
And he said, well, if I slaughter my dog, if I slaughter a pony, if I do it, then that's illegal. So I was going
to
do this.
Well, why not go back to the old Abraham Isaac tradition and put the kid up there?
So, but here's the thing.
See if he can cut the throat.
I could not do the story. They wouldn't let me do the story because it was being culturally insensitive. If I were to do a story and point out that a criminal suspect was in this country illegally, couldn't say that because that was being racist. No matter, you could do a story on illegal immigration and you couldn't say illegal immigration, right? The bias was so profound. I quit. It was like you just, after a while, you just get tired. And not only that, but you realize you're going against the grain, that they're not going to change.
I run a newspaper, the Glendale Cherokee Chronicle, and I have our reporters who I try to do some conservative, you can possibly find one, and some liberal and so forth. And then we ask for their suggestions. 99.9 are liberal, 99.9. And so I cut the worst ones, some liberal ones, I don't mind. You know, we try to have a balance and so forth. If I have a conservative one, I have to give it to somewhere in the executive staff.
Right.
That's just the way it is. They never would think anything that is slightly on the right side is that would be a story idea. I mean,
right.
That just shocks them too.
Well,
and when I get in resumes, it's always they emphasize, I worked in the Bean Project. You know what that means, right?
Well, and this from Sandra saying, you know, the left progressives always think they're smarter, brighter, and know more than conservatives, which is absolutely true. And the trouble with newsrooms these days is it's filled by, number one, that kind of narrative. You look what's going on at the New York Times, where veteran reporters, as bad as the New York Times is, even they're being outed because you got a bunch of these whiny snowflake, I don't know what they're not millennials anymore, but the whiny snowflakers, who are like 22, are offended by stuff. This is, I heard today from so I don't know if this is true, this could be fake news, but a former colleague who worked at Fox 31, KDVR TV, where I worked, they have now banned any and all kind of cursing or swearing or the use of profanity in the newsroom. And it is the kind of offense that could get you literally fired. Now, I guarantee you, newsrooms are rough and tumble places, right? It's high stress.
But somebody may go, oh my God.
Right.
And that's, you know, hey, fire.
And here's the thing, you look at what's going on with Dr. Seuss, and this is my belief, it's just a very short step from saying, well, I was offended because Julie said the F word, right? So we need to get rid of her, to, you know, Julie expressed.
She's reading Dr. Seuss to her
child.
Did you know that? Were you aware of that?
That she's reading that racist Dr. Seuss book to her kids?
You know, Tucker Carlson pointed out that the Dr. Seuss man was just a preachy liberal.
The Lorax. I mean,
well, he was
Wharton
always doing little stories to,
right,
you know, show discrimination was awful and you shouldn't do one based on people's characteristics, but who, what they were. And he was revolting in some cases. He was preachy. But even he now, he's a bigot.
Right.
Because they didn't like how he drew some of his characters. I haven't yet, you know, Tucker tried to get this woman to tell, well, what is
wrong?
Offensive?
And right.
She says, is there some word in there that might be offensive to you? Do you use the N-word or something? She said, no, but some of those pictures, they didn't look, you know, the drawings, some of those drawings, he didn't draw humans. So some of the drawings, it's vaguely Asiatic.
It's like the cat and the hat. Give me a break. And so, but
yeah,
here's
the cat. What does that mean? And the hat. That's
clearly
how clear.
Racist.
Yeah, it's anti-Semitic.
That's right.
It looks like a top hat. They're attacking Jewish banks. I knew it.
Well, and it's so ridiculous. 888-627-6008. But it is also scary on a couple of fronts. One, you know, I'm going to say this at Fox. Like I said, at the local Fox newsroom, if they're starting to ban people for using profanity, swear words, it's going to go on to whatever. Julie's saying that she thinks that America should be great again. Julie's saying that she she thinks we should be able to question things.
No, they could just wait around because there'll be certainly, you know, word Nazis. And somebody, you know, you'll stomp on the foot and they go, damn it. And they go, fire.
Yeah.
Fire.
Well, and the thing is that this is why, I mean, there's a bill progressing through the Colorado legislature right now by Senator Kerry Donovan, who, by the way, wants to replace Lauren Boebert, even though she doesn't live on the Western Slope. But at any rate, and it would essentially, it's copying the bill going through the House in Congress, basically that would allow censorship of what they consider to be extreme or hate speech, which guess what, guys, that's us. Okay. They want to declare anything they don't like is hate speech. And here's what's scary about it. You look at how we fell for the COVID scam because they scared us. And they did it incrementally. First, it was just like stop the curve.
Well, you had some reason to be scared. They're showing you pictures of all these dead people.
Which turned out to be not true.
And everywhere else. And if you had followed the 1917, 1918 Spanish influenza, that actually did happen. And so if there was some areas concerned, yes. I mean, when they first said 2 weeks, you know, tap down the curve, I was like, well, that seems reasonable.
It does seem reasonable. But now we are.
Now, a year later,
literally a year later.
And you're a Neanderthal.
You're
not wearing your mask.
And all of a sudden even the Washington Post, Michael Tao had a great column up on Red State. You went through all these times that the Washington Post talked about how ridiculous masks were and we didn't need to wear a mask. To all of us now, they're masks, you have to wear a mask constantly. But the system conned us into doing that. They're conning us into saying, oh, we can't read Dr. Seuss. They're conning us into saying, oh, COVID is going to kill
us. And this is the best thing about the Dr. Seuss thing. The people who are refusing to publish a Dr. Seuss, six of them out of, I don't know how many Dr. Seuss books are, is the Dr. Seuss Foundation itself acknowledging the complaint, kind of going, yes, of course, we've got the sinful six. You can read the rest of them, though. You can buy those, but you don't have to worry about you getting one of the sinful six.
Are being their sales are rocketing on Amazon.
No, but they'll run out of them. They'll become collector's
items.
But
it is like the anchor, Carrie Lake, who quit, said, you know, and reading the COVID copy, it is clear that they put out misinformation. It is clear that they skewed it. It is clear that they went back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. It is clear that, I mean, it seems to me, and I think probably to a lot of our listeners, any reasonable person would have to, at the very least, conclude they have what they're talking about.
There are no reasonable people. Joe Biden is literally not there. I mean, we're now into March. The last person who didn't give a presidential State of the Union was Jimmy Carter, which worked out great for him back in 1981. I mean, what is little Joey doing?
And again, will they complain? No. Governor Cuomo kills 10,000 people. His 13, policies in nursing homes, that's all okay. But he makes some he makes some comments that some of his aides years later have now decided they found offensive. And all of a sudden, now he needs to quit. The thing is, though, people, this is what's alarming to me.
Some vaguely, you know, sexual vagueness. That's we got to get. He's got to die for that. But killing 13,000 people and hiding it, well, that's serious, of course, and we can't ignore it. But it's certainly not like saying.
And here's a bit of a teaser. We'll have Michael Tao on. He's done some great investigative work into why Governor Cuomo issued those nursing home orders, which are obviously stupid, which is even more alarming.
Here's
the thing, though, and I agree with that anchor for this. In terms of, she's like, we're spreading misinformation. We're contributing to the fear. The trouble is when shows like this or other people write columns that try to calm down the fear, they get banned, they get censored, they get pulled from YouTube. But
Carrie ought to look for a job at Channel 9 News here in Denver. Yeah. That would probably work.
But, you know, yesterday I was at a place of business, and I don't want to say I don't want to get the owner in trouble, but where they didn't force you to wear a mask. And until another woman came in and she was wearing one. So we all put on our masks. And this woman, which part of me wanted to resist, but it wasn't my place of business. And the woman was there and she was feeling very happy because she had just gotten her second vaccine and was planning to go out to a restaurant for the first time in a year.
Wow.
And she looked at me and she said, have you been to restaurants? And I'm like, yeah. I said, and I'm a bit of a rebel. I've gone to restaurants and coffee shops and places that actually don't make you wear a mask and don't wear a mask. And I said, because I think that the whole thing has been overblown.
Did you tell her that?
I did tell her that. And she scooched over. but she was clearly, and she said, well, aren't you worried about the mutations in the vaccine? So she wasn't, even though she's had both of the vaccines, she was contemplating going to a restaurant for the first time in a year, but she was worried now because the virus was mutating. And and she was sincere. She was a bright, it seemed to me. She seemed smart. She was
really, you're a rebel with a restaurant.
There you go, a rebel with, but I mean, here was a woman, and there were people, a lot of people, and I think we all know them out there like that. And they listen to the media and they get scared.
Well, Fauci has been pushing this mutant range. Why, after in March 22, we can't go back to normal. They want to
keep us under control.
Under the dictates of Dr. Fauci. And what that con man will not say is that all viruses mutate,
yeah,
everyone in the world. And the vast majority of them become more contagious and less deadly because that helps the virus. So that there are new variants. There's never not going to be new variants.
Well,
and Dr. Fauci, who's got to be, you know, he has.
Well, he's trying to maintain power. He's a highest paid federal employee, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So the last thing he needs is for the virus to end. And the last thing, so why are we even listening to him? The guy has a vested interest in continuing this.
Well, the whole Fauci thing, a lot of people bring it up, and what a, you know, kind of suspect business things he has. But the problem is, you know, he does have this good bedside manner, this kindly looking face, and he's a liberal, so you know you can.
Well,
he's progressive, but he's just a sick man.
And it's all about control. I mean, every time you hear stuff like that, and that's what I wanted to say to this woman, and I didn't, because it's
shut up,
yeah. She would have pulled out her gun that you can't know. Is that all they're trying to do? It's about control. Has nothing to do with the virus. Has everything to do with money, I think, and with control. And they did it once, and I guarantee you, they're going to try to do it again. Why all of a sudden are they in the Colorado legislature? Why are they trying to censor all kinds of speech? The Colorado legislature is passing gun control laws that they've tried to pass forever. That the citizens have, there are recalls over it. That the citizens have flat out told them, no, they don't, because they know now that they can control us through fear, through censorship. They believe they can
and rig the election
and rig
have the
election.
Republicans
so
say it's the gold standard here in Colorado.
And the thing is, if you dare mention the fact that the election, if you raise a question, you don't have to say rigged. If you just say, you know, I have a question about that, though. What about this? What about that? You're censored, you're banned, you're considered to be hate speech, and they want to make it a crime so you can now be arrested in Colorado.
Why not? Why not?
So we have to continue pushing. And you have to just, that's why that anchor, I hope she goes on to someplace else and doesn't just go into... open a yoga studio or something like that. Yeah, she needs a podcast, because that is, I think, the other good news. And that is, there are half the country understands the big lie. The big lie is not what they're telling us it is. It's not Donald Trump. The big lie is what they tell, and big lies, we should say.
Their first big lie was the Russian
hoax.
Mm-hmm. You know, and now they're into the election fraud.
Right.
And then they have so many useful idiots who, the chairman of the Republican Party, who couldn't find his way through a kitchen, tells you with two clerks from you know, rural Colorado County.
Former chairman, not Kent Buck.
He's still a chairman until March 27th.
No, was that Kent Buck who was saying it was? Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry, I'm wrong. I'm sorry.
was saying that, you know, hey everybody, it was a Zoom call to all Republicans everywhere. You know, it's a gold standard. It's perfect. And then he goes to Republican clerk, you know, did you cheat? Were they cheating? And you go, Ken, you can't be this stupid. They must have paid you off. Where the cheating occurs is not in some rural county. It's in the middle of Denver.
I mean, he's buying it.
And he's just, I mean, how can it be any help when the chairman of your party is really the Pacheco.
They're part of the swamp, and I mean, and this from Leo.
They're part of the swamp. I don't. You know, they're mentally. You know,
well, this is from Leo too, which is again, you don't hear this. He says the CDC data from Monday, 99.98 survival rate. CDC recommended data adjustment, 99.98 survival rate, and that's before the vaccine. So, and this from Mark is actually right. Fauci is making millionaires. He's a wannabe billionaire.
What's he gonna do it? He's too old.
But you don't hear that. You don't hear about the survival rate. Instead, you hear that somehow miraculously no one died of the flu, but it's just,
well, you know, they had, as I repeated before, they had 746 cases in the NFL among players and staff and coaches. Not one had anything more than the most minor of irritants.
But they,
you know, so that survival rate was 100%. It wasn't 99.999.
Yeah.
And then we find, you know, but all you ever get from the criminal corporate media is some story about some health worker's mother died of coronavirus. And you kind of go, oh, really? Any comorbid? Well, she was 99. She was in terminal
stage. Run over by a truck.
Run over a truck, terminal cancer, and she shot herself. But she died of COVID.
No, it is ridiculous. And thank goodness for that anchor, not only for quitting. I mean, because I know we did that. It's scary, right? Not only did she quit, but she spoke out and she explained why she quit.
Was great. I love her.
And I think that's the kind of thing we need to constantly push back. You know, and speaking of pushing back, then let's go to our guest, okay?
Yeah, that'd be
great. Because I see he's in the waiting room. He's in the Zoom room, I think. It's Dr. Roy Johnston. Hey, Roy, are you there somewhere? Thomas, is he there? I saw him come into the show.
Yeah.
Hey, so Dr. Johnston, if you're there, you need to turn on your camera and unmute your
yourself.
Microphone.
Okay, start my video.
There you go.
Yo!
Hey,
can
so
you hear me?
We can hear you.
Yeah, I got you. We got you.
Thank you for your time.
Guys.
And I want to tell folks, we appreciate any and all tips. I know Leo and Mark are very good about sending tips, but Dr. Johnston sent me an email saying, hey, look, you know, I'm aware of your show. I've got this great book out. And so tips are always welcome and appreciated. And here you are. So.
Well, tell us about yourself and then your book.
Well, as I say in the introduction to the book, I'm really nobody special. I'm like you guys. I'm like the 74 plus million who voted for President Trump. And I've been a working stiff for 37 years. I finally retired and moved to Colorado, and we're still trying to find Republicans to have friends with, you know?
Yeah. Well, here you go. You found it.
That's your big opportunity.
It's a big opportunity. Give us a little bit.
They're not on every corner.
Now, give us a little bit about your background, if you may.
He did it. Where were you spend 37 years being a stiff at?
Yeah, well, I was a university professor in Oklahoma State to begin with.
Well, see that identifies you. Why you don't have any Republican friends?
Yeah, right.
Hey, wait, let me tell you this. Here you go. Already from on the Zoom, I don't know if you can see in the chat, you can see people. So Leo says he already likes Dr. Roy, and Sandra says me too. So you've got two new friends.
things went well at Oklahoma State, and you get hired away from industry because you got to support your family, you know? And I did that. I worked in agriculture with a big company called Cargill for 15 years and became a director with them, and then moved into the food business with Cargill and then with a number of other food companies that are, they're the ingredient manufacturers. So nobody would know their names, but their products are in everything we eat and drink.
So you became a director of Cargill?
Yeah.
Well, that you know, Cargill pays its directors a lot of money. Do they just exclude you from the big paychecks or something?
I was a token, I guess. I was a token guy who didn't get paid big money.
You brought down the average or the mean, huh?
Well, tell me about that.
I was a university prof, so I was pretty naive and
dumb. Okay.
We don't have to pay him anything.
Talk to us about your book, and 34 Days in Holding. And I want to let folks know, you can get it on Amazon. There you go. When we were talking, you know, when we first talked to each other, I thought, what a perfect idea. And so explain how you even got into the thought of writing the book.
Right. Yeah. So we all knew that this would be, you know, to quote Saddam Hussein, the mother of all elections. Right. And so back in September, I just had the idea. I mean, what am I going to do? I mean, we're all cave dwellers. And so I thought, you know what? I'm going to write a real-time history about the election. So I started on October 1st. So October 1 to November 3 is 34 days. And then Ann Holding is like, okay, you know, how long are we going to be waiting? And it's a real-time history. And I worked diligently. There's over 100 pages of references. So everything is factual. Everything is documented. But I can't help but inject my own opinions every now and then, you know, and a little humor and stuff like that to try to keep it light. So we go through the 34 days in holding. It ends on January 6th with the congressional acceptance of the electoral vote and the breaking into the Capitol. I talk about that, too, in the end. And that's where it closes. Then I end with a warning of where we're going and spend a few pages about that. But I don't think we have much time.
No, I don't think we do either. One of the things, and it's always easy to be critical, but it doesn't seem that either the president or the RNC or the various state parties really spent anywhere enough time or attention on what is happening to their voting procedures.
Absolutely not. And you know what? In the book, I go back and I build a timeline because the Democrats had a plan. The Republicans were typical Republicans, naive, you know, believing, you know, and
it'll all work out.
Yeah, it's going to be okay, you know, and we're going to get along. But the Republicans had a plan, and I outline that in the book. And it goes all the way back to 2014 when Francis Collins, the head of the NIH, Dr. Fauci's boss, started funding the virology research lab in Wuhan.
Yeah,
right. I go all the way back to there, and then I build it all the way up to the election. And one of the big things is what I call the four pillars of Elias. So there's you've heard of Perkins Coie,
yes,
a big law firm in Washington, D.C. Mark Elias is one of their partners. Pardon me. And he put together, he actually published, you can go online and find it. So I talk about that in the book. Excuse me, I got one of my mustache whiskers in there.
You can drink whiskey or beer or water if you need to. Yeah, that's fine.
All right.
There you go now. That much better. Elias, and then he put this plan together. And if you ask the 74 million who voted for Trump, what do you think about the Mark Elias and the plan he put together for the Democrats? They look at you like they don't know what you're talking about. I mean, this thing was well orchestrated, and I give the timeline event by event by event, how Fauci plugged in and played his role from early on, how he set up President Trump, how Bill Gates is playing a big role here. He's back. Hillary Clinton all of a sudden advises Biden not to step down. Things like this, you know, well in advance, like, why? This never happens. This was all orchestrated, and the Republicans are just, you know, thinking everything's fine, and then they're surprised, you know, when they lose.
Well, talk to us a little bit about...
Well, and they always, here in Colorado, when did you move to Colorado?
2016.
That's when everything started to go really downhill.
Not because of you. Just in time.
I'm sorry.
but you know, I've lived in Democratic towns all my life. From Washington... New York City, where I was born, Aspen, Boulder. Democrats think about elections 24/7.
And they 365.
365.
Yep.
They also, and this is what, and I'm going to get the whole soundbite. It'll take a while, but Rush Limbaugh, toward the end of October, said they don't believe in democracy. You think that you want to vote for burning down of the Capitol, of getting rid of small businesses, of masking. They know that if they actually told you what they wanted to do, you wouldn't vote for it. And so they have to, one, hide it. And now they're even not even bothering to hide it. They just go to plan B, which is just to rig elections. And then, you know, it's nothing new. The solid South starting in 1876 was solid because the Democrats made sure that no Republican blacks voted. I mean, that, and Republicans were fine with that. They did their usual, oh, okay, your poll tax, okay, everything else. It wasn't until those people under Roosevelt and afterward became Democrats that the Democrats said, whoa, 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 we can't have that stuff. And where do they think, you know, Boss Tweed came from and the Pendergast gang? Yeah. So those are two for 100 years. They were cheating in the South and cheating in the big cities. And you kind of go, they wouldn't cheat. No, not the Democrats. No.
Well, I mean, we're talking to Dr. Roy Johnston about his new book, 34 Days in Holding. Let me ask you this then, and we can first a specific question, then a broader question. So as you're recording this and watching this, I want you to talk a little bit about, I would assume that you became somewhat increasingly horrified, but I mean, talk a little bit about that, what you were seeing sort of in real time unfolding. And then if you can go back to kind of like the overall sort of conclusions that you came to.
And in addition, what, if anything, could have been done back in October?
Okay. Yeah, it's a good question, Julie. In fact, I think that's one of the things that actually will make this book, which is really, I call it a historical commentary, probably unique in history. I've never read a book, a history book, which I read all the time, that was written in real time.
Okay.
It's always written in hindsight, right? That way you can say what you want. So here I lay it out, and you can tell as you move from chapter to chapter that I show my emotion, my surprise, my cynicism, and everything else as we move along. But then when we got to on the November 3rd, I think it's chapter 12, was November 3rd. And so we're setting up watching TV and watching the returns come in. And, you know, Trump is the betting odds in Las Vegas went 65% Trump, 35% Biden, total flip from 2 days before. And then all of a sudden, Fox calls Arizona. Yep. Then things began to get shut down. I mean, Georgia shuts down. Wisconsin shuts down. Pennsylvania shuts down. And so Michigan. And it's like, what? You know, even we were watching Brett Baer, and he was like, what's going on? They're stopping the counting. And so, you know, I sat there and watched it for another hour, and I've got all of the data. I recorded the data as it happened. So this book is, it's a real interesting read. It's fast, but it also, I mine out the data. I actually proved mathematically there's no way Trump lost. You know, but anyway, you can see my surprise, but it, because it's like OMG, you know. And then I went down and I found a lot of the local news stations who were reporting. This one was out of Atlanta. They have real time blogs, and so the young people are posting in real time their thoughts at the time, uncolored, un anything. It's just honest reporting, you know, for that little blink of time. So I capture a lot of that and show their, like, what's going on type comments. So that's in there. And then as we move into the afterward and the recounting and, you know, all of the issues with the voting machines, the four powers of Elias were the things that allowed for ballot harvesting, for the extension of post-dating, for the relaxation of no signatures or no signatures or, you know, all of this stuff. And I go into the detail of that and explain how that all was used by was planned by the Democrats. As soon as COVID-19 hit, they were on top of it.
Right. Well, we'll talk about what are the four pillars. You said Mark Alliance was with Perkins Coie. Is he with Lawfare too?
I don't know that, but Perkins Coie, he's a partner. The four pillars, see if I can remember them. I could look them up.
No, that's fine.
Signatures, okay. Signatures aren't important.
Right.
Mail-in ballots, absentee ballots, we got to get. Then the automatically mailing of absentee ballots to people who've never voted, this kind of stuff.
Well, and these are all things that are in the current H.R. 1 that they're trying to pass in Congress, essentially, right?
If you buy the book, you can read about it.
Well, And you're right. And I think, and who knows, the COVID thing, they played it masterfully. And let's get to the end of Chuck's question. What, as you're watching this unfold in real time, did you ever feel like picking up the phone and calling, you know, the
Donald
RNC?
Trump saying, Donald needs to talk to me.
Somebody needs to get this information to him right now.
Well, I've sent him a book. I've sent a lot. But anyway, back in the real time, I got kicked off of LinkedIn. I got kicked off of Twitter four times. I'm banned from Scientific American, because I used to be a scientist. So, I don't have much of a voice anymore.
No.
At least digitally, I mean, sometimes I just take a walk in the park and talk to myself. At least
I do that too. Well, yep. I mean, what could we or do you even?
What could have Trump or the RNC or state parties done?
Was it too late by then?
I don't think so. Now, there's two factors to that. President Trump, if you go back in time, and this is in the book, he got it. He began to say in March, and I've got quotes from him in the book, people, this is coming. This is going to happen. We're going to have voter fraud. People who never voted, or we've got people voting from out of state that don't live in the state. You got all this kind of stuff. And this is all documented. I mean, the Sidney Powell stuff that she captured, releasing the Kraken, and the Supreme Court won't even let them hear the case. So, but Trump knew it. He did everything he could. It's just that the dummies in the Republican leadership were too busy doing something else. I don't know.
Well, the one thing that seemed to happen to Trump all the way through, from day one to who knows, Mike Pence, making sure that we got rid of Michael Flynn and everywhere else, that there you go. You think this is a huge fraud, and you think you have an attorney general in Barr that is at least,
going to look into it.
Yeah, he's going to be a fair guy. He's not under the control of the swamp. And then you find out he is under the control of the swamp.
I mean, we were all, I think when Barr walked out, I just about had a heart attack.
Yeah.
Because I really thought he was the real deal.
Right.
And actually, my second book, which is half done, talks about that. But because I'm writing about the first 100 days.
They're in real time. Well, I think, you go back.
Well, when Barr came out and said that.
Well, they lied to us about the investigation, right?
Well, no, but
Durham report. Where's the Durham report?
Right, yeah. Right. Well, Durham quit.
Durham's resigning.
Oh, yeah. It's coming out any day because Barr told us he wants the American people to know what happened.
Yeah, yeah. Not really.
Nothing they saw showed that there's enough fraud to influence the results of the election. Now, one of the precepts that I know a little about from the Justice Department is you do not casually give you results of an investigation.
Right.
If that was a valid investigation, he needs to do that in a formal setting and with the people who investigated and everything else. Instead, it's just, did you look at it,
no.
Attorney General Barr?
No.
It's just the violation of judicial or prosecutorial standards was just atrocious, but it doesn't matter. It's just.
To your book, here's the thing. I mean, I'm surprised Amazon, once they find out what's in it, they'll probably ban it, right? Like they did Alex Berenson's book on COVID. The trouble is, and I think you're probably right, I think Trump saw this and saw it coming. I mean, we've known Colorado legislator Susan Beckman, former representative here in Colorado, who saw this and tried to warn people. And I think Trump was just surrounded by either people who were too dumb, too short-sighted, or just too corrupt to do something about it. And I think Trump is trying to do it now. But again, that's why I think they're cracking down so hard on all of this censorship. That's why they don't want to do audits. That's why if you even raise the question, they censor it. So what are any thoughts on how do we stop those sort of four powers of Mark Elias? Or are we doomed?
Mm-hmm. Well, the Supreme Court is key. Yeah. And
that's reassuring.
Tony Barrett and Kavanaugh, I don't know where they are. But anyway, that's key. But the American people, I think, can still do something.
Okay.
Number one is we got to stop being nice.
Yeah.
You know what? We got to stop self-censoring ourselves. Ever since we've moved to Denver, to have friends, we have to self-censor ourselves. I'm done with that.
Yeah.
You know what?
Well, I'm calling can I ask you, having lived in Colorado for now 50 years, why in the world you moved to Denver?
We have a daughter here. Grandchildren.
Well, why you have, why do you
Denver,
have them
the city of Denver?
In Denver? Why right. do you have them in Denver?
Well, why, the warning sign wasn't up at this point, you know?
And move up to Weld County, and then you'd find some compatible folks.
Yeah, well, we live in downtown Denver.
Oh, no.
Why don't you just take a knife out of it? There's a lot of fun there these days.
Is there any restaurants?
I put my book in the lobby of our building, and people walk around it like it's scripted, like it's, you know, radioactive.
Well, I think you're right, though. We need to stop censoring. Like I said, I was telling the story before. I was at a place yesterday, and a woman was wearing a mask, and she's like, you know, aren't you worried? And I'm like, no, I'm not worried. It's all a big con. You know, no, I go into restaurants, and I support restaurants that don't make you wear a mask and that violate the stupid, illegal, unconstitutional regulations. And I think you're right. We need to. And you know what? And if those people don't want to be friends with us, that's okay. They can sit in their home, isolated, getting more and more depressed, wearing 3 masks. And then still getting, falling in their bathtub, you know?
I walk around with a Trump hat on.
Oh, good for you.
Oh, my God.
Good for you. Good for you.
Still alive.
You're a little masochistic, but what the hell?
Leo is saying it's parental abuse letting your kids move to Denver.
He says he's going to call child services. Oh, they're all lefties, too.
Well, I was still one of those meek and mild Republicans. Actually, I'm not a Republican. I'm an independent. I don't like the Republicans either half the time. But, they're better than the alternative.
The Republican Party, and I'm on the executive committee for the entire state, and I hate the Republicans half the time. but compared to the Democrats, oh my God.
And Sandra's saying, you know, Chuck and Julie always say that no more nice. And let me clarify that, because I think we got to be careful with our words. Here's the thing.
No, don't self-censor.
And I'm not self-censoring. We need to remember we are being nice. They're the ones not being nice. They're the ones saying, if you say that, I'm not going to be your friend. If you say that, I hate you. That's not nice. If you were talking to your kids and your kids, you would say, you know, that person is not your friend, right? Go find one. And so that's what you need to.
If you want to, we had a regular radio program, and I made a joke, and they didn't like the joke, so we got thrown off the radio program. They came to our house. They threatened our children. They threatened dog. They out in the park. They'd attack you.
Yeah.
These people, if you kind of, we got to be nice to them. Kind of like, woo. Yeah.
I had a Trump flag flying from my balcony.
Oh my God.
Take it down.
They didn't want the whole building firebombed.
Oh, I think that's what it was. Really?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how much time you guys are willing to give me, because I really appreciate it, but I wanted to read you one poem.
Sure, we've got 3 minutes left. Thomas just told us, so 3 minutes.
Okay. Now, Chuck, I just want to make sure that we don't violate any rules here. Can you say the word steal on your show?
Yes,
we can, but we just can't promote it. You can say it, but if we promote it, YouTube will... Okay.
Can you say the word stop?
Yeah. It can sometimes.
Okay.
Don't put them together, though.
Can you say them together?
No.
No. Literally, okay. If we put that in on the header for our show, YouTube would take.
And
us
we already
down.
Have one strike, so they'll suspend us for a week.
Okay. So I'm very cynical. I mean, how can you not be, right? But so to try to just make myself calm down and laugh a little bit, I have some poetry in the book.
All right.
Okay.
We have only 2 minutes now, though.
It's called S the S, man. S the S. 'Twas 2 days post-election when all through the land websites were rising saying S the S, man. I want my vote counted, they said with a shout. But they were just little people having no clout. Then to my wondering eyes did appear, but sights of Big Brother going here, going there. Cancel that page. Censor that site, said Facebook and Twitter as they turned out the light.
It sounds a little like Dr. Seuss, which gets in trouble.
You're really canceled. Now you're totally canceled. Dr. Roy Johnston.
You've been great. You've been great.
Hold up your book one more time. 34 days and holding. You can get
Amazon.com.
Amazon, every place else. Doctor, thank you for your
time.
Thank you so much.
You've been great.
We appreciate
Thank you, guys.
All right. Thank you, everybody on Zoom. Thank you, everybody listening. ChuckandJulie.com. You can catch the show. You can get the poem if you didn't get it all recorded there. Thank you, Thomas. And we'll see you all on Party Friday.